Hello and welcome to Theatre Voice. I'm Alex Sears and this session is devoted to the subject of new writing from the perspective of the playwrights themselves. Here to help me understand some of the conditions under which new work is produced in British theatre today are two writers. The first one is David Eldridge, whose latest play In Basildon was at the Royal Court earlier this year, and whose The Knot of the Heart and The Stock Dawa were staged in 2011. The second writer is Duncan Macmillan, whose Lungs was recently produced by Payne's Plough and Sheffield Theatres, and whose Monster won two awards in the first Bruntwood playwriting competition in 2007. Both of these writers have been part of the Antelopes group, which is where our discussion will begin. Welcome to Theatre Voice, David and Duncan.
Hello.
Hello.
Duncan, could you start off by talking a bit about what the Antelopes are and when did it all begin?
Yeah, well, it began with David and I had a cup of coffee. We hadn't really met, and I don't think we knew each other at that point. And we just thought it'd be nice to have a cup of coffee and a chat. And after several cups of coffee, we thought it'd be a really nice idea to get a lot more writers together in a room, because writing can be quite a solitary business. There's no Christmas party, there's no office party, and writers are also generally really bloody lovely people. I really like playwrights. Everyone I've met has been, everyone's really supportive of one another. It doesn't feel like we're competing with each other. Everyone's happy to read each other's plays and early drafts of things. It's really nice. So I thought it's something I'd been thinking about for a while, and I think David had been thinking about independently, and we thought, well, let's just do it. So David hired a room above a pub and sent out an email to all the writers he knew, and I sent out the same email to all the writers I knew. And I got there, I think, about the time we'd said it was going to start, and David was there and three or four other writers were there, and we thought, shall we move to the bigger table in case more people come? And then about 10-15 minutes later, the room was packed out, standing room only.
Interesting.
And it felt like that first meeting felt like it really, it struck a chord or something. There was a lot of anger. and it was very galvanising and exciting and worrying as well. With everyone in the room had some sort of terrible experience. And so what had begun, I think, as an opportunity to just get to know each other and have a chat and have a beer, became potentially a movement of sorts.
Now, that was the 22nd of June 2009, and the pub was actually called The Antelope.
That's right, yeah.
And that's where the name came from. You also had Robert Holman, I think, talking to the playwrights, is that right?
Yeah, well, I think that it just kind of felt like quite good to kind of have a, so that the meeting didn't become some sort of entirely kind of directionless throng.
Yeah.
If our worries were proved untrue, as they were, and actually a number of people did come, that kind of having someone sort of talking about a kind of a long career as a writer, rather than, I suppose, Duncan and I sort of relatively shorter careers, might be interesting and useful. Not to talk about the past in any sort of nostalgic way, let's all turn the clock back to 1956. As Robert himself has quipped on occasion, the Royal Court put on a lot of crap as well in the 50s, 60s and 70s, as well as those great plays.
So
there wasn't any issue of kind of wanting to be nostalgic in any way. And that was it, really. Do you know what I mean? That was all it was kind of to try and give the meeting such as it might be. We didn't know they'd kind of be standing remotely, but even if there were just like a dozen or two dozen, that it might give the kind of evening a bit of focus.
Okay. And what's the format of subsequent meetings? I mean, do you meet regularly or is it more ad hoc?
Well, I think it was quite important as well, like having Robert in the first one, that the emails always come from different people. I haven't been to... they're still happening quite regularly. I haven't been to a meeting for more than a year. I'm not sure if you have either, David.
I've been to one.
You have been to one.
Yeah, in fact, I've been to two in the last year.
Yeah, and it's always a different makeup of people. The emails come out from different people. There's always a different guest speaker. Because there's, I think we realised quite early on that, having said we thought maybe this is a movement, there was talk about should we draw up a list of demands, should we create a manifesto, should we write down and try and articulate what this is.
Yeah.
And actually, the one thing we really realised is there's very little anyone can agree on. Everyone needed a completely different process. Everyone wanted to work in different relationships with theatres. As people were describing their experiences, there wasn't a theatre building criticised without three or four people leaping to its defence and having a completely different story. So everything was... It was quite appropriate that it was at the Antelope Pub, because it did feel like a herd, and everyone heading in different directions and bumping heads, and it was exciting for that, you know, people yelling across the room and arguing with each other. So it was important that there was no real... really strong single agenda, and I think in those early meetings when we were trying to work out whether that's what it is, I think it put a few people off, but what it did throw up was something was happening, and actually there was something really worthwhile talking about, which is I'm sure we'll go on to talk about later, but which is thrown up these Writers Guild pamphlets, which I think have been really useful.
Yeah, we will cover that later. But I just wanted to stick with this because I know you were involved with the Monstrists as David, and they had a little manifesto. Or you had a little manifesto on that. And in this was much more different in a sense. It was much more fluid and democratic and formless. Is that right?
Yeah, more like a kind of a network, really. And sometimes incredibly democratic and sometimes just who shouts the loudest, you know. But I would also say, just following on from what Duncan kind of said, it's something that was contained in my open letter to Barbara Matthews and David Edgar, that actually there was a kind of realisation, was that actually the power of it was just in the kind of gesture of us meeting outside of the patronage of theatres and theatre-sponsored events of our own volition and off our own sort of effort and off our own backs. And secondly, the thing that we felt was a kind of a weakness, or began to worry was a weakness to begin with, which was somehow that we couldn't write a manifesto in the way that the Monsterists did, actually wasn't a weakness at all. It was a great strength, because actually what that seemed to say is that actually there are as many ways to write plays as there are playwrights. And it's a mistake to think of managements and funders' relationships with playwrights in kind of just one way, particularly in relation to kind of commissioning and developing new work, that somehow if you kind of give someone a seed commission, give them a reading, do 15 rewrites, have a workshop, pop them on an attachment, repeat.
Bingo,
there you get a kind of a great play and a great playwright. And somehow, I think that while there were lots of kind of concerns that came out of those kind of early meetings and since, I think that I would say, I don't know if Duncan would agree with me, that was the main concern, actually, that theatre by the middle of the last decade in its relationships with writers was becoming more and more like telly. It both in the relationship to the way that the work was developed, and also the fact that because of an unintended consequence of all of the great funding that we all enjoyed and did so much brilliance for the theatre, which we now find is under threat from the coalition. But one of the kind of bad unintended consequences of all that healthy funding for writers was that theatres over-commissioned in a major way and overdeveloped. So theatres were kind of popping out more plays than they could ever hope to produce. And because they were all at it to a certain extent, we'd moved away from a culture in which maybe the National Theatre and the Royal Court over-commissioned, and then that those plays, if they weren't done, were picked up in other theatres.
To a situation
where just lots and lots of these plays weren't being done. And that's the thing that was very common with telly, that you just commission and develop loads of work, only a handful of which get produced. It means that both the writers and those plays just have much less value. The managements have much less commitment to them.
Yeah. And also that means that theatres and commissioners have more power, and therefore writers have less power.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So what was one of your aims then, to have more respect or more power, sort of, if you're all together? What kind of position did gradually emerge over the?
It feels to me there was something that there were two things that everyone would unanimously agree on pretty much, and there were only two things really, and that was that we wanted to get our plays on, we wanted to see them on, and we wanted to be paid for our work, and that was pretty much it. Everything else, when we started talking about development. Some people were really anti-development and some people really benefited from it and loved workshopping things and loved working more collaboratively. Some people just wanted to be given the money and left alone.
Yeah.
And everywhere, and on the spectrum, everyone was somewhere different on that.
Yeah.
So it was very difficult, and there were no... It's funny talking about it as a group. I sometimes think it's not exactly a group, it's like an email. It's an email list of addresses.
Yeah.
And it's whoever chooses to go along. And we knew early on we couldn't represent all playwrights. It's funny, after that first session, which was kind of quite whingy and quite cathartic, everyone...
Everyone, really angry and
really anxious and looking at what the coalition cuts were going to do and wanting to make sure that it wasn't going to hit playwrights the hardest, which was a big worry. But after that session, I think we kind of got to the end of it and someone said, this has been really cathartic, it's been good to sort of vent our spleens, but can we make sure we don't do this again, because it's actually horrible. And if we're just getting together and complaining once every few months about our plays not getting on. There were a couple of senior writers actually who kind of suggested some of you aren't getting your plays on, probably because they're no good. And so it became, which they might be right about, but it got to the point where we were like, okay.
Yeah, you don't want to hear that.
No, there was a strong sense at the end, I think, that we wanted to, there was enough people in that room who wanted to do it again, and felt it was important to keep these meetings happening, but that we wanted to make it much more positive next time, because we felt like we'd heard enough bad experiences, and there's only so much you can do with that, and actually it was looking at our own conduct and part of that is sort of becoming more aware about what our rights already are, because a lot of us didn't know. That's the strongest thing that's come out of it, I think, for me.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's fair to add on to what Duncan said, though. I think there was a kind of a general kind of desire, though, to kind of have more kind of respect.
To kind of
have more respect, really. And I think I'd kind of just kind of really emphasise that thing about writers' responsibilities as well as rights.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like I remember quite a well-known writer saying in one of those early meetings, you know, if you accept a commission from the theatre, write it within the year that you've signed up to in the contract.
Absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? If you've agreed with the theatre, if you've agreed to write a play for a small-scale touring theatre company, then don't get upset if you deliver them a play with a cast of 10 and they can't produce it.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it would be a misconception, although there was a kind of a massive outpouring on that first meeting, it kind of was always kind of balanced as time went on, you know.
Yeah. Now, I noticed that you don't mention other writers by name, which is absolutely fair enough. And you had Chatham House rules operating. Can you just explain that for our listeners? What are those rules?
I don't mean to explain that. I mean, what it means basically is that you can talk to anyone outside of the meeting that you've been at about what you've discussed.
Yeah.
But you can't attribute those comments or observations to anyone by name.
Yeah.
Okay. And the reason for that was that, you know, while it kind of might get me into trouble occasionally, I can generally kind of say what I like in public, on blogs or the rest of it. And I don't feel a tremor of terror that my career is going to be harmed in a major way.
Yeah.
I might have a theatre that's maybe pissed off with me for 6 months. In fact, there's a major one that feels a bit like that right now. But it's not really going to do any kind of massively kind of serious harm. But a number of writers that were at different stages in their careers, who were kind of writing promising first and second plays and so on, and just getting their early plays on, were really, really worried that if they publicly kind of criticised any of the managements, or were heard to have publicly criticised any of the managements they may have been working with, that they would be, there would be a black mark against their name, and that it would make things difficult for them.
And is this the sort of paranoia or fear, understandable fear, that you get labelled as a difficult writer, or as somebody who... basically, I don't know, what is the fear really?
I think it's that, yeah, I mean, it's such a collaborative industry, and everyone, and the feeling that actually that we every meeting I've been to, people keep saying it, that everyone's trying their best. I mean, they're not going out of their way to give people unpleasant experiences. They're trying their best, and actually a lot of what the group became and has become is being more aware of what our own conduct is and what we could have done differently.
Yeah.
And it's also a lot of writers were really sick of being told how to do their jobs by people who didn't know as well as they did, and so we weren't in a position then to tell other people how to do their jobs. But yeah, I think there was a lot of paranoia, and I think there was a lot of paranoia outside of the group about what was going on in the group as well. One writer said it was as if a ripple had gone through the force.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite interesting, and it was interesting
so
how to see
started
how,
to worry.
Well, I don't know if it was that. I don't know if it was. I mean, I've had some meetings with people who felt like they were being personally attacked in the meetings, and other companies were really interesting. They heard that these meetings were taking place, so other theatres would invite a bunch of us and just give us an open invitation.
It slightly reminds me of the early days of feminism. When all the men started to worry because the women were all talking together, you know. But it could be any subaltern group, couldn't it? You know,
right.
Sort of suddenly, you know, the servants are conspiring.
Mm.
And there has been this shift that you've talked about. And in fact, I think Robert Holman is quoted as saying, at one point, theatres used to listen to writers. Now writers are expected to listen to theatres. And if that's true, why do you think there's been this shift?
Well, kind of to put that in context, I mean, I would say that I think that the Antelopes, in combination with some new artistic directors and literary managers here and there, and in combination with some of the reductions in subsidy that theatres have been receiving, I'm not by any way advocating that the arts shouldn't be well and generously funded.
Yeah.
But what's happened is that just in practical ways, some of the theatres just can't afford to commission so much work anymore.
Yeah.
And they are, in my view, rightly spending the money on producing new plays, on concentrating on developing fewer plays, and having a greater commitment to that work, and going out and finding plays.
Mm.
And I think that's right. So I think that there's kind of been a shift again in the last sort of 2 or 3 years, much to the greater good.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think that it's like a lot of things. Why things went the way they did before? Mm. Why did it start to become a bit more like telly?
Mm.
I think it kind of there's a well known female playwright of the kind of mid-90s, who says that she feels that kind of in the kind of new writing explosion that happened, that kind of changed everything a little bit, out of the kind of early and mid 90s that you know an awful lot about, Alex, that kind of no one, it was, the culture was very innocent. In that it no one really knew what they were doing. Do you know what I mean? It's just suddenly there were all these plays and people were putting them on. And then, like any culture, it went from a kind of state of being innocent to a state of being more sophisticated. So as you get to the kind of end of the 90s, the beginning of the last decade, you know, people are starting to kind of have sophisticated ways of engaging with writers. People are starting to say, well, actually, if we kind of do this to develop a writer or encourage a writer in this way, put director with this way, then you know that happened. And I think that what happened then out of that period for most of the kind of last decade was that the culture became decadent. There was a lot of money knocking around. People in positions of power who were mainly directors and literary managers think they know all about writing because they've been doing it for 10 years now. They think they know better than writers sometimes, not by any means, you know everyone, of course. And I think that's just what happened. You know, it's like, it's just like looking at a fruit that is unripe, is ripe, and then sometimes maybe goes a little bit rotten.
Yeah. I mean, in the past, and this is until quite recently, there was only about 6 new writing theatres that specialised in that, plus a whole load of fringe venues. You know, in the last 10, 15 years, it's exploded, especially after the Boyden Report. So almost every theatre in the country, it sometimes feels like, especially outside London, has a new writing programme now, you know? So obviously there was a kind of increase in production, which on the one hand is great, on the other creates these problems.
Can I just pull you up on that? Sorry, Alex, but I don't have any problem with that. I think the more new plays we do instead of plays by people that are dead, the better. It's more this issue of what the ratio is between the number of plays and writers that you develop and the number that you actually produce.
And
I'd like those kind of numbers to be as close together as possible.
Right.
You're always going to commission and develop more work than you produce.
Yeah.
And it's perfectly sensible for any management to do that, because sometimes when the plays turn up, they're not ready yet, or they're just plain not good enough.
Yeah.
So you have to have more.
Yeah.
But it's whether you need to have 2, 3, even 4 times more writers under commission than you have to actually produce. That's the question.
Yeah. Okay, and what do you think the main problems of the playwriting culture are at the moment? I mean, sort of this idea that theatres have a lot of commissions, many of which they don't actually end up producing. That's obviously one. Are you worried about things like, for example, second productions of a successful play? We don't have very many in our playwriting culture. Or is it this kind of endless search for novelty? Or what do you think are some of the main problems?
I'd quite like to hear you expand on that. It sounds like you've got some ideas. I mean, I feel fairly new to this myself. I mean, I feel like I'm only really starting out. David's got a lot more experience. He's got more years on me. Sorry, that sounds insulting, but
it's great.
But certainly second productions, I think, is really smart. I think that's our theatre culture would be changed enormously if there was a dedicated company.
Yeah, because there's that feeling that, for example, if the Royal Court puts on In Basildon, your play,
then everyone will have seen it has seen it.
I mean, Daniel, and actually, if you think about it, how many people have come down from Edinburgh or Manchester?
Well, Daniel Evans at Sheffield, I think, is doing a really extraordinary thing. He's put on the Village Bike, and he's put on that face in recent years, and they've been done very, very well and found their audiences. And I think I think that's fantastic. I think some of the things we've talked about is a dead writer's tax. If you do a play by a dead writer, then maybe there's some of that the what you pay to do that goes towards a supporting younger and newer writers. But
leading on from that, I can see that you've got 2 booklets that have been published by the Writers Guild of Great Britain, and they're 2 pamphlets under the title The Working Playwright. One is about contracts and another is about, well, play development, very broadly speaking. Can you say a few words about those?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that the Antelope Group was good for is if a theatre company or if an organisation wanted to reach out and just canvass the opinions of some writers, we could just extend an open invitation to anyone who was on the mailing list or anyone who was had access to the group or had come along to a meeting, if anyone was interested in going along and talking.
And in fact, your mailing list sort of rose to about, I don't know, more or less 200 or even more writers, haven't you?
More like about 170.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But that's still great.
And one
working
of those playwrights, they're not just sort of people who used to be playwrights.
And one of the organisations was the Writers Guild, particularly through David Edgar and Amanda Whittington, who came along and just were canvassing the opinions of playwrights, and that became a more formal thing where a smaller group would go along to the Writers Guild and talk it through, and so it's culminated in these two pamphlets, which are online as well, which don't give us any more rights. It's not creating anything new, but it's making us more more aware of what our rights are and how we should engage with theatres. So there's one pamphlet on agreements and contracts, and the other one is sort of a suggested working methodology for engaging with theatres.
And what does that cover, the sort of methodology? Because I remember it says things about workshops, it says things about, you know, other ways of developing.
I mean, just to say another general thing about it, really, these two pamphlets, is that, you know, the one about agreements and contracts, you know, it's just the case that often just practically when writers get commissioned, they get the contracts from their agent or direct from a theatre and they sign them and return them. And then they haven't necessarily got a copy of their contract to hand. Maybe they ought to scan a copy, but often don't have a copy to hand. And even if they do, or they, you know, they have a copy to hand, you know, you're sometimes looking at kind of a kind of a 15 or 20 page document in all sorts of legalistic language, which you're kind of ferreting through just to kind of get an idea of whether you've got any rehearsal expenses or not. So there's a very kind of simple
all
way
rights
of kind
to
of,
attend the rehearsal.
All
rights to to help in casting or have a voice in that.
It really is a great document, you know. And in fact, I've already used this document. I've recently accepted a commission from a well-known theatre, and when I was emailing the theatre about kind of delivery and the terms of the terms of when I was going to deliver the play and you know how we would work on it, I couldn't remember off the top of my head how long the theatre according to the agreement had to give me an answer. So I just got my little pamphlet out. Oh right, 6 weeks, great. And I was there. So I think that they are practical and great. On the other one, the green one, is kind of all the stuff that kind of falls between the cracks of what's covered by contracts. So just to say generally, you know, just how practically, because it's the work that we do in theatre, all theatre is collaboration. It's all people and other people. And that's a kind of infinitely complicated and wonderful, but sometimes problematic set of transactions and relationships. And what that pamphlet seeks to do is just to look in useful ways at things like readings, workshops. You know, if you're there as a writer on a kind of a portmanteau type project, or as a writer that's being a bit devised by a director and actors as well, where there kind of is needed a little bit of clarity, because obviously the way that theatre is being made in this country, and it's part of what's great and rich about our culture, is that plays and theatre is constantly evolving and being made in different ways. And sometimes the role of the writer is changing and shifting over time, you know? And so really it's kind of going into that sort of territory.
And do you think that in general writers are a bit more empowered now? I mean, what are the effects of these meetings and so on? I know, obviously, you haven't changed the world completely, but have you sort of at least, you know, taken a few steps? And not just you two, but, I mean, you know, your colleagues as well, all the other writers involved.
I think it has. I mean, as I said before, I'm much less worried now than I was 3 years ago about development culture in theatre.
Yeah.
I think it's become much more bespoke.
Yeah.
And much more tailored to the individual playwright and the project.
Which is how it should be. Yeah.
And there are all sorts of reasons we've already discussed about why that's the case, so I'm much less worried about that. But I think that's a great general thing. But I also, you know, when I think about politics and political action, I think it's great if you just kind of change one person. And I love it every time I have some sort of engagement with a younger writer or a newer writer. And they say, oh, you know, I had a meeting with so-and-so, so-and-so. And I would have been a little bit shy to before, but I asked them why it was the case they wanted me to do that.
Yeah.
And to me, that's brilliant. If someone just has a little bit more confidence to ask a question, then it's worth everything, you know? It's worth everything.
Yeah. And what about the government cuts? Because obviously they will become more intense, probably. I mean, I'm not sure, despite all the lobbying and everything. Do you think this will affect the sort of playwriting culture adversely? What do you think?
It's bound to. It's bound to. I mean, I think that what's happening in the regions is terrible.
Yeah.
So one can only, if this is all followed through, one can only sort of just really worry that, you know, going back to that position that we were kind of in the 80s, where, you know, it's kind of the safe bet for regional theatres is to do the kind of classic revivals and not the new work.
Yeah.
In terms of kind of...
And this is because local governments are cutting funding.
Like Newcastle, recently.
Yeah.
I would say in terms of London, I think probably kind of London is a bit more kind of protected, although that's much less fair on the regions than the rest of the country.
Mm.
But I still see kind of great kind of danger, you know, in the cuts that are coming our way. You know, if theatres start to cut back on the numbers of productions of new plays and go, actually, it's the way that we can satisfy new writers is by having a workshop or a reading of their play, because it's much cheaper.
Yeah,
because that's a thin end of an American kind of wedge.
Yeah.
This kind of where living writers kind of have to be satisfied with readings and workshops.
Yeah.
It's also a culture in which there's a political system that puts a stupid and philistine, in my view, emphasis on philanthropy as somehow as the only way you can really sort of
fund the arts. Yeah, and you're not going to get many philanthropists who want to fund new work, especially if it's different or daring.
Yeah.
You know, we haven't really talked about programming, and I've noticed that theatres program more safely now than they used to do. You know, a hint to a young writer, write a comedy. It can be slightly edgy, but if it's a comedy, you've got a better chance.
I don't think
that's
true. I don't think a theatre ever says that to a writer.
Oh, no, they don't say it, but look at the programming.
Yeah, I think it's fair enough to sort of look at the programming, but I don't think, to be fair to the managements we've got, like, they would never say that to any writer.
Okay.
No, we're better than that over here.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad to hear it. Okay, yeah, of course, the counter-example would be Constellations, currently in the West End.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah.
Okay, on that positive note, thank you very much, Duncan and David.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.